Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview with actress, singer, Elena Opie. Elena is currently starring as Blanche DuBois in the production of Streetcar Named Desire at the Players Theatre. Although discovering her desire to act and to sing really early in life, Elena's life had taken some detours. Listen to the way she found her way back.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh,
and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being who you really are. It's clear to me as a psychotherapist that too many of us are living lives that have very little to do with who we really are. We are demonstrating aspects of ourselves, being parts of ourselves, having access to parts of ourselves, but not the whole self, not the whole truth of who we are. So many people have had experiences in their childhood which discouraged them from being something that they really were. Maybe it was a way of talking, or laughing, or eating. Maybe it was an interest you had. Maybe you were interested in playing with dolls, but your family were all scientists, or you were a natural artist and your family were all scientists. Or the other way around, your family were all artists, all creative types, and all you wanted to do was add up numbers. And maybe you came from a family which couldn't tolerate the difference, which for reasons of their own, felt that you must be like them, or at least you must be the way they wanted a kid to be. And so they found subtle, and in many too many cases, not so subtle ways of letting you know that what you were was not all right. This can even happen to the expression of emotion. Maybe when you got hurt and cried, you were told in no uncertain terms that that was not all right. Or, unfortunately, there are people who are made uncomfortable by laughter and joy, and that can be squashed as well. There are so many, many ways in which people come out of their childhoods believing that something about them, and unfortunately in many cases many things about them, are really unattractive or unpleasant or are going to bring a consequence they really cannot tolerate. Well, if you hide aspects of yourself in your childhood, that is one way to get through your childhood with a minimum of damage, and it's a healthy response to create a coping mechanism that makes you safe. That's a very healthy response. But when you come into the world not having access to all that you are, stifles you, stops you. And of course, everybody really knows this, at least unconsciously. People think they're a fraud, or they think there's something wrong with them, or they're terribly embarrassed when they get caught doing something they were told was not all right. And that's a very difficult way to live. First of all, you are cheated out of the person that you are and the things that you could do. And then, as I said, many of us have this feeling that there's something basically wrong. They're not exactly sure what, but they know it's something. So the Lin Show is about saying that if this happened to you, if somebody in your family of origin discouraged you, or if you got discouraged by peers or classroom teachers or anywhere, maybe you saw a movie that made fun of something that you were, and you harbored the fear that you would be discovered as this thing, and others would make fun of you. As I said, living like that is really difficult, and the Lin Show is about saying that it may not be too late to recover, to embrace, to recognize, and enjoy who you really are. In my show, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, because when you listen to them talk, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And the interview that I'm airing today, as I said, is with actress and singer Elena Opie. And Elena's story is interesting because, as you will hear, she was struck as by a thunderbolt at having received a pamphlet that offered her an opportunity to study acting, dance, and singing. And from then on, she knew that that was her calling. But she had to take a detour. And so I'm not going to tell you any more about that, because Elena tells it best. So here now is actress and singer Elena Opie. And I'm here with Elena Opie.
Yeah.
And I'm interviewing her because her current role is as Blanche in Streetcar Named Desire.
Correct.
At the Players.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, good. So I'm just explaining that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Okay.
And it's clear that the art to which you have given your life is, would you say, performing? Would you say theater? What would you say?
I would say performing in general, theater and music, singing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, good. So I only ask one question.
Okay.
And it is, do you remember the first moment in your life when singing, dancing, acting, telling stories, having people look at you, any of that happened, drew you, called to you?
I think I was always a performer. My parents were both musicians, and so I was always singing growing up. We were a very musical family. But I don't really think I considered it a calling until I was about 9 years old, and I got a pamphlet in the mail for the Venice Theater's summer theater program. They do dance, acting, and singing. And I got this pamphlet, and for some reason, my 9-year-old brain just clicked and said, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I have no idea why or how, but as soon as I saw that, I just thought, this is it. And I told my mom, I really want to do this program. And they gave me a scholarship, and the rest is history.
Well, That's right. You remember the moment.
I do.
Yeah. And do you remember before that, that you didn't think of it at all? I mean, you never thought about what I might do when I grow up, or am I going to be like my parents, or I really like this. You didn't think of any of that. You were just doing kid.
Pretty much. And I probably at some point maybe said, I want to be an actress, but I don't think I ever really was serious about it or thought that it was even something that I really would end up doing. So
when you said to your parents, I want to take this, you didn't say I want to be an actor, or did you? No. You said, I want to do this program.
Yes.
And they said, sure, honey, like that? Right?
Yes.
Right. Okay, good. So do you remember the program? Do you remember the experience?
Vividly.
Tell me.
All I remember is being so excited to go there every single day. There were amazing teachers who were so passionate about what they did. And we would do rotations. We would start with acting, and then we would take an hour of acting, an hour of dance, and an hour of music. And it just clicked. It just felt so right. And I was so excited because I felt like it was a calling. And so from the very beginning, it was something I took very seriously and was able to put my energy towards. And so I loved it.
Okay, so you're 9 years old.
I was nine,
okay,
yes.
Right. And so even if, I think you're saying, and I knew that I wanted to do this with my life. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. So so this is a summer program for a nine-year-old.
Right.
So what happens after that?
Then I just sought out every possible opportunity I could take.
Like what?
Any type of music in school, any type of acting classes in school, after-school programs. Any type of little shows that they did in school.
And were there all these opportunities? There were...
Not really.
Not really?
Not really. There weren't... There were classes, but they were few and far between. And that was a time that there were, I think, a lot of cuts in funding for the arts.
Oh, lucky you.
In Sarasota County Schools. Yeah, so it was pretty much just maybe an hour a week on Friday mornings, music, and then after school programs if you wanted to do any kind of extracurricular stuff. But
which you did.
Which I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you didn't take voice lessons, dance lessons, piano lessons, acting lessons, nothing.
Not really.
You didn't say to your parents, I want to do this, again, there must be none of that, right?
No. My parents were both artists, and we didn't have a lot of extra money growing up, and I also had five brothers and sisters, so
oh my gosh.
There wasn't a lot of extra money to go around. They did absolutely the best that they could, and they were amazing, but as far as classes and lessons and things like that, I just kind of taught myself as much as I could and soaked up as much as I could when I was able to.
Okay, so I'm assuming this goes on through high school then.
Yes.
Elementary school, junior high school,
yes.
Middle school, and high school, right?
Yes.
And you're grabbing whatever you can, whenever it's there,
pretty
right?
Pretty much,
right.
Yes.
And so, okay, so at some point, did you say to your parents, you know, I really want to be an actor, I want to be a performer, I want to be, yeah, did you?
I did.
Yeah.
And I won't tell you what my father said because there's expletives in there.
Yeah, right.
He basically said, you're crazy if you want to pursue this. He said, you know, you've seen your mother and I and how we've lived and we've chosen our art and it's difficult and it's a struggle. It's a daily struggle. And if that's what you want to do, then I 100% support you. But it's hard and it's a hard life and, you know.
And we would not have chosen this for you.
Maybe not necessarily. I think that they understood where that passion and where that drive came from, obviously, because they do it themselves. But, I think every parent wants their child to pursue what they love, but there's probably that little bit of, you know, yeah, they want you to, you know, have something to fall back on, I guess, as you always say.
Right.
When you go to school, it's like, maybe you should get a degree in this. That way you have something to fall back on, you know.
So when did you have this conversation with them? Do you remember?
I think I had a really serious conversation with them when I was probably halfway through high school because I had a couple of really fantastic drama teachers who basically said to me, we think that there are some schools that you should try and audition for and work towards attending that could, you know, could be great for you. The American Academy of Dramatic Arts and a couple other places, and so I had to sit down with my parents and have that serious talk.
Okay, so there were drama teachers in your high school?
In high school, yes.
Right.
Not so much elementary and middle school, but once I got to high school, yes. A great theater program, great music program. I had some incredible teachers that have been a huge influence in my life and my career, so...
Good to hear.
Yes.
really. I like to make that point whenever it comes up because teachers can make the difference on both sides of that equation.
Absolutely.
And they can help people like they helped you, and they can discourage people, which is the other thing they can do, right? Okay, so fine. So halfway through, you have this conversation with them. Your teachers are encouraging you. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be looking to go to study somewhere, right?
Right.
And so what did you do?
I went to a local school, a community college.
We're talking about money here again, right?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
I think my mother was a little bit afraid to let me fly the coop to go to New York City or something. So she said, why don't you just get your two-year degree, get your associate's year, and then see what you want, where you want to go from there. And then life happened. And
what does that mean?
I met someone, I got married, he encouraged me to finish my degree in something that
you could fall back on. Oh my God. I see. So you went to did you go to Manatee?
Yes, Manatee Community College.
And you took an associate's degree in?
Theater.
In theater. Well, okay, good.
Yes.
And so you continued to have some training.
Yes,
and you met somebody while you were in college?
Yes.
I see. And then you got married.
We got married. He was in the military. We moved to Germany.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. We lived in Germany for 3 years. I finished my degree. I got...
Where? In Germany?
Yeah, yeah. There's the University of Maryland has a satellite school there for military members and their families.
So you finished your degree in...
In humanities with... a focus in theater and English.
Splitting the difference.
Yes.
Sort of right? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I never gave up.
No.
He really wanted me to, but I never really gave up on the dream, so.
That's such a problem, isn't it?
It really is.
Really, So it is interesting that you managed to marry somebody who didn't see you.
Interestingly enough, when we first started dating, he was just the most supportive person.
He tricked you.
Yes. I mean, he would come to my rehearsals. He would sit in the back. He would give me feedback. And then once we got married, he said, I thought that was just a hobby. I didn't think that was something that you would actually want to pursue for the rest of your life. It was a doozy, for sure.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's eventually why we got divorced.
Well, good.
Yes.
And I mean, this is another point I'd like to make. So a lot of women who find themselves in that spot don't get divorced.
They give up on their dreams.
They give up on their dreams. That's exactly right. They give up on the person that they actually are. Okay, good. So, wow.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
It was incredibly hard to do. It was probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. You know, when you make a life with someone and you spend, you know, most of your adult life with someone. I was 21 when we got married, so...
Yeah,
it's hard to do.
It is not. I mean, I don't think we can underestimate how hard it is. Mm-hmm. For all of the reasons, we have the myth in our culture, you know, that marriage is forever. And you think that's what it's going to be, and you certainly don't marry somebody. Well, hopefully you don't marry somebody you don't think you're going to be with, that you don't think you love.
Yeah.
And so the disappointment is awful. Mm-hmm. The challenge is awful. All awful. Mm-hmm. So congratulations to you. Okay, good.
Thank you.
So how old were you when you got divorced? Do you remember?
I think 28.
28? 7 years?
Yeah.
Okay, were you back in the States by then?
Yes, we were in Denver.
In Denver?
Yes.
Okay, so then did you come home to Sarasota?
No, I stayed in Denver for a couple of years and I did theater. I did it to my heart's desire. I did it nonstop.
Really?
Yes.
What did you do? I mean, was it...
I just auditioned and just did whatever I got cast in.
And you got cast?
Yes.
Yeah, so you got work.
Yes, even though he told me I never would.
Did he really?
Yes. But it's really okay. I've made peace with it.
No. I'm not, I'm delighted that you made peace with it. I'm more delighted for you that you took the risk anyway again, I want to say this thing again. So many people, you were very young.
Yeah.
And so many people do, I don't want to say would have, but lots of people do believe what they're told in that context. And they get undermined.
Right.
And they can't take the risk. So...
But it could be anybody. It could be parents, like you said earlier. It could be teachers. It could be anybody who's a big influence in your life who discourages you from pursuing something that... But I really, truly believe that if you have that passion inside of you, it's going to come out at some time, you know? I really don't think I could have spent the rest of my life never truly pursuing that. I mean, it's almost a compulsion. It's not even something that you can control. It's like, I have to do this. I have to perform. I have to do
this. I love this. I love to hear this. But I will tell you that I have interviewed fairly recently women who put it aside for 30 years. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, they didn't give it up.
Right.
But they gave up 30 years. You know, so
right.
It's so, and I'm assuming that the influence of having seen your parents do this mm-hmm. was another thing that you had that gave you some permission. I mean, not only that they did it, but that they thought you could do it. No?
Yes, absolutely. And I think even it's interesting that you just kind of went back to my parents because. Growing, I mean, my parents are still married over 30 years, and, you know, they've been through tons and tons, but they've always supported each other in their art. And I think that that has been such a huge reason why they've made it this far. I mean, of course, they love each other.
Right, right.
You know, but being able to be free to be who you are and to express yourself in that way, that's what a marriage should be. That's being able to support each other. I want you to do what makes you happy, and I want you to let me do what makes me happy. That's what a good relationship should be, and that's what I always wanted in my life.
And I just want to, I agree entirely. And the fact that you had that as role model,
right,
probably went a far way into helping you say, I know this isn't right.
Right.
You know, I mean, however hard it is, I know this is not how it's supposed to be because I know how it's supposed to be,
exactly.
And this isn't it,
exactly.
Right? Right.
Exactly.
That's great. That's again, these are all things that that I find so important because so many people are discouraged in all kinds of ways, all the ways that we're talking about.
Right.
Either directly because people say you can't do it, or you shouldn't do it, or it's too hard, or we didn't do it. You know,
right.
any of that. Mm-hmm. So, all right, good. So you're in Denver and you're auditioning for everything you can and you're getting everything you can. And I assume that you're pretty much supporting yourself, no?
Yes.
Yeah, wow.
Working as a waitress.
Okay, fine.
Of course.
You're doing what you had to do in order to support your habit.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay, good.
And getting paid a little bit, not enough, but
yeah.
A little bit.
Right, good.
Yeah.
So then what?
Then I was in another kind of rocky relationship, and I was ready to come home. I was ready to come back to Venice. I was ready to be close to my family and to come back to my hometown.
Mm-hmm. So when was that?
This was 2010.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good. So 2010, mm-hmm. you return home.
Yes.
And then what do you do?
I auditioned at the Golden Apple.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And didn't get it, but the director, Bob Tresolini, said, you know, thank you for coming out. I'm having auditions for another show at the Players. I would love it if you would come out and audition. And then got just a small part in the ensemble and just kind of worked my way up from there. So
you've been working ever since, essentially.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right. So... let's talk about Streetcar.
Okay.
All right. Blanche is a difficult role.
It's probably one of the hardest things I've ever done.
I'm sure. And maybe I'm wrong about this. Are you young for it?
It depends. I think it depends. She should be a wilting flower. It is not necessarily said in the script necessary. It doesn't say specifically, but she should be, I mean, this is the 1947, So she should be, you know, past marriage age.
And it didn't happen.
It didn't happen. Well, it did, but he died.
Right, right.
So, so she, I consider her to be about my age, 34, 35, which in 47 was
would have been old.
Old.
That's right. Yeah. And that's probably why I think of her as older.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
I think, you know, if I, like when I first was interested in the role, looking through pictures of, I've seen women 30 play it, and I've seen women who are 50 play it. So it really just depends on the director and their vision, and you know.
Okay, so imagine that the people listening don't know anything about this play, because really, I don't remember the last time I saw it done as a play, and the movie was what, in the 50s?
I want to say early 50s. It may have been, early to mid-50s maybe the movie was made.
Yeah, Marlon.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people, they know like lines or scenes from it, but I think most people that I talk to, they say, oh, I just haven't seen that in ages, so.
Well, if they saw it at all, I mean, because
right.
if it was in the mid-50s, some of your audience wasn't born.
Yes.
You know, so say some things about the play, whatever you think you can say that would help people know what they're expecting.
Basically, it's hard to give a synopsis without giving things away if someone hasn't actually seen it before. Basically, Blanche DuBois comes from old Southern money, and her sister, Stella, their family kind of crumbled. They lost their estate. Her sister, Stella, moved to New Orleans to try and make her own way. Blanche stayed to try and keep the estate together, and the
old life as much as she could.
Yes, mm-hmm. And at the beginning of the play, she just sort of descends on Stella with her big trunk and all of her bags packed, and says, "I'm here, and we've lost the estate, and you know,
and I have no place to go,
basically." Mm-hmm. And Stella is living with Stanley Kowalski, and
not exactly the Southern gentleman that they were used to.
Yeah, you know, a Polish man. You know, he's very low class. Very. They live in a two-room, basically apartment, and Blanche is horrified. And so, from the very beginning of the play, this kind of setup, you know. Blanche doesn't like Stanley, and Stella's trying to keep the peace, and as the play progresses, you learn more and more about what really happened with Blanche, why she's really there. I don't know.
It's all right.
Too much away.
You don't have to give any more away. And it's really a character-driven play.
Yes,
you know,
definitely.
I mean, you get to find out about all of the characters, really. And it's a situation in which what each of the characters believes, well, you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, what each of the characters believes is right.
Exactly.
You know, is proper, should be done, how it is, and their visions of this are diametrically opposed. So
absolutely.
It's so difficult for them, impossible maybe.
To see eye to eye.
To find any way to be together in it.
Absolutely.
Right, right.
So it's just kind of a ticking time bomb, you know?
Yes. And it's a little bit like what our political situation is today. You know, the polarization based on this is what I believe and this is what I believe and you are wrong because this is what I believe. And,
right.
And no way really... No middle ground, no compromise, no, right? And,
coming from such different places, you know, one comes from money and high class and high society and, I mean...
And entitlement.
Yes.
Right?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very, very much so.
Right. But that brings up that other issue, you know, when one has been bred to believe that one is entitled to certain things. That is really hard to give up. Again, I'm having a political thought here, but in 2008, when the crash came, I saw a lot of people who had done extremely well in their lives and were living on investments and were living on them for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly that all disappeared. They really didn't know who they were or what to do. But Tennessee Williams forces us to see that if you aren't able to alter, bad things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. Without being more specific.
Yeah, there's more that I want to say about. It's interesting about Blanche, because even though she shows up on Stella's doorstep and puts on these airs like she's so much better than Stanley, she really is even more destitute than he is, which is so interesting that she still acts like she's this high society, you know, woman, but she's in much, much worse shape, you know, but yeah, still won't let go of that.
Right. Well, that's her identity.
Right.
She can't. And that's the important, that's the point, I think, that, I'm really stuck. I mean, I want to say that the ability to see past your identity, maybe, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's exactly like I was saying earlier, you know, I grew up in a relatively low-income family, and so I am a liberal, and I have a hard time seeing, you know, the conservative point of view sometimes, because to me, I am willing to pay extra taxes in order to help those who are less fortunate, because that's where I came from.
Right.
But I can understand someone feeling like those who use government programs, et cetera, et cetera.
They're taking advantage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I can, you know, so it's frustrating for me to see that point, that side of things, that point of view, because I come from such a different place.
Well, and this is the point, isn't it?
Right.
And it's funny because, you know, Streetcar is not a political play.
Not at all.
But we're living this dichotomy. The inability of people to be larger than themselves, mm-hmm. to, you know, and, you know, bad things happen if you can't. Mm-hmm. So how is this as a role for you? Is this a stretch for you? I mean, as a person, do you know what I mean?
Not necessarily. I try and find the human in every role that I play. And
so
I
can you find the entitlement in this role?
Yeah, you know, it's simple, it's oversimplifying the character of Blanche to say that that's all that she is someone who, you know, and I don't mean to say that because there's so much more, you know, the road that she's traveled and where she's come from and, you know, the bumps along the way.
But not big bumps.
Yeah, big, huge bumps.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So it's, I can relate to the journey that she has taken, you know, even though she came from a place that's different than, you know, the journey that she took, I can relate to, I can understand, you know, as a woman, the loss that she's experienced, you know, the trials that she's been through. And just as a human being, I mean, I always try and relate to the characters that I play on a human level and to just make it my own, to make it my own journey and to make it my own experience.
Well, I mean, you didn't have Blanche's experience, but you did experience some of the stuff that she did.
Absolutely.
You know, and so you actually do have it. Do you know who David Howard is?
I do.
Yeah. So David told me that one of the things that acting... One of the surprises that acting gave him was that he discovered that when he had to play a role that was someone who was absolutely nothing like him, he was shocked to discover that he had that person in him, you know? And it was shocking, but it was liberating and exciting, you
yes.
know? He didn't have to live that out in his life, but he got to live it out
right.
on stage, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's so cathartic in so many ways to be able to just be awful.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Yes,
to just
yes.
be a nasty person
yes.
person to say nasty things. One of my favorite parts I think I've ever played, I was in college and I did another part of the forest, a Lillian Hellman show, and every character in that show is just nasty, mean, you know, just ruthless, and that is so much fun because, you know, I'm probably one of the most non-confrontational people you'll ever meet, and I'm, you know, usually try to never step on anyone's toes, never say anything mean or nasty, so it's so nice to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So fun. So much fun.
I talked to Raphael Petlock yesterday, and he's playing in Why Can't I Be You?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
He's playing the stalker, and mm-hmm. he said there was nothing more fun than playing the psychopath,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Right. Which there's a little bit of that in Blanche as well, which is fun.
Well, and I wonder if, you don't actually have to answer this.
Okay.
Well, you don't have to answer anything. that's just because I asked it, that's right. But I'm wondering if being able to play confrontational on stage helps you to be able to find it in your actual real life, or whether it doesn't transfer.
It doesn't transfer
it
for
doesn't,
me.
Doesn't.
Well, no, it doesn't.
Well,
no.
Wait.
I certainly hope so. I mean, I know, you know, people always tell me as they get progressively older, they care less and less about hurting people's feelings.
No, I wasn't talking about that.
What do you mean?
Oh, good. I'm so glad you said that because that's not what I meant. For me, confrontation mm-hmm. is about standing up for yourself.
Right.
Not about hurting another person, but not allowing yourself to be hurt.
Yes.
You see?
Yes.
So it's interesting that that's where you went, right?
Right.
And I think really that one of the reasons that people shy away from confrontation is because they have that view of it, that it's unkind, that it's mean.
Right.
And in actual fact, I really think I'm going to repeat myself now, but I really think that the ability to confront is the ability to protect oneself.
And just stand up for yourself. Yeah,
yeah.
But that's my issue, is that I usually, and you don't have to include this, but usually I consider other people's feelings
yeah.
before my own.
Right, you defer.
Right, and so my first instinct is, well, I'm not going to say that to them because it might
hurt their feelings. Even though I have to pay for it, right? Even though it's a sacrifice,
right? Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, right. If you don't mind, I would like to leave that in.
Okay,
I would. Because I think that's really important. I think that too many people actually have that.
I totally agree.
You know?
I talk to people all the time who say the same thing.
Yeah,
especially
right.
particularly women, I think, more so than...
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And Blanche come down on this. She's not that nice.
I think she is. I think she means to be. I don't know that she really necessarily means to...
No, it's all self-defense.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, it's all self-defense.
Yeah.
And that's another important thing, that the ability to stand up for yourself. I mean, this is just philosophy, right? I mean, you know, I really think it's essential. I really think it's essential. And that you are right, that as a culture, we have discouraged women from doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there's so much sexual harassment, and why when women call out sexual harassers, there's so little support for that.
Mm-hmm. That old adage, if a man is in power, then he's powerful and he's a man, but if it's a woman, she's a bitch. She's
right.
being a bitch.
Right, right. So every time we can say, I can say on the radio, and you can agree with me, that it's okay for women to be self-protective.
Absolutely.
And if taking care of myself somehow makes you feel bad, then I'm sorry about that. But that wasn't my intention. But I'm really not willing to let you have your way at my expense.
I completely agree. And that's a constant struggle, a daily struggle, I think.
I think it is. And of course, what you said is, you know, this culture supports that. It's in a lot of people's interest for us not to take care of ourselves, right?
Right. Absolutely. Right.
So, is there a role you would like that you haven't played?
There's probably many. I've always wanted to play Maria in The Sound of Music. Never going to happen for me, but...
Why?
It's just really, it's not my type of role. I always play I have a type, and that's just not it. I'm not really an ingenue. I'm not really, you know, I usually play like the sidekick or the funny one or the best friend. I'm more an Elsa Schrader than I am a Maria.
Right.
I'm not really a soprano either, so it really wouldn't.
Okay.
But I grew up watching that movie, and I always wanted to play that part, so.
Well, but you can sing the songs.
I probably could, except for that one that goes really high. Yodelay, yodelay, that one. Yeah.
No, I didn't mean that. I meant, I know you just did the cabaret in Venice, right?
I did.
So if you wanted to, you could sing the songs in your cabaret act.
I did.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
What did you sing?
I sang The Sound of Music.
Uh-huh.
And then, yeah, I did, because when do you ever get to sing the songs that you want to sing, unless it's that type of, you know,
I saw Patti LuPone do Trouble in River City.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you know, I'm never going to get to it, right?
So, right.
You know.
And when you are lucky enough to be able to have that kind of venue and that type of performance where you're able to literally sing anything that you want to sing, it's so much fun.
Yes.
It's so much fun.
So, when did you begin to feel comfortable about singing and why?
Well, I always sang my entire life, but the performance side of singing never came really naturally to me. I think that performing while you're singing and being interesting to look at and is being able to emote what it is that you're singing wasn't something that came naturally to me until I was almost in my 30s, or maybe even, like, after my 30s.
Do you know why not, and then why yes? What wasn't there, and then did something happen?
No, maybe it was, when I was in high school and college, I focused more on the acting side of things than I did the singing. I wasn't in a musical theater program. I was just in a strictly acting program. And so it wasn't something that I practiced, the performance side of singing.
Right. Were there voice classes, though, or not even?
Yes, but they were completely separate programs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there wasn't, like, there
yeah,
was no crossover.
And you didn't get to use them.
Well, I focused more on the acting side of things.
Right, right.
And so I never really learned how to audition for musical theater. I wasn't a great auditioner. And so I think that just kind of hurt my ego a little bit.
So I'm curious. I'm just curious because I don't know the answer to this. What makes somebody a good musical theater auditioner?
I think being confident.
Ah. Well, yeah.
I always knew that I could sing. I always knew that I was a really good singer. But when I'm standing in front of people and they're looking at me and I'm singing, I used to be, not so much now. Mm-hmm. I obviously have had a lot of practice. That was actually one of the nice things about living in Denver is I would just go and audition and audition and audition because I just considered it practice. And the more I did it, the better I got at it.
So this is just a leap. Maybe this isn't true. But when you're acting, you're playing somebody else. But when you're shaking your head.
Exactly.
Right.
That's exactly right. And I've said that exactly what you're saying about 100 times.
Yeah, right.
When you're acting, you are playing someone else, and you can hide behind that.
Yeah.
But when you're singing, it's you. You're raw, you're bare.
Yeah. Actually, it doesn't work if you're not you. A lot of people sing, and they're not them, and it's not that interesting.
I agree.
Right?
I totally agree.
Right. So what it sounds like is that you... It's interesting because you took such a hit with the guy, the military guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he didn't do anything for your confidence, you know. So it's wonderful, actually, that you have come to the place where you feel like you can be yourself, in, you know, when you're singing in front of people, that you can give them that.
Right.
And you don't have to be shy about it or self-conscious or, I'm assuming that that's right?
Yeah, there are certain situations where I still struggle with it. But for the most part, if it's on my terms and it's something I'm doing and I'm enjoying, then I can do it.
Yeah, I want to suggest that you start going to the jams.
That's something that's really difficult for me because if I'm not, like, really rehearsed, I get nervous playing with a live band, too, because I don't have that, like, confidence to let them know where I'm going and what's happening. Like, obviously, my mom, she does it all the time, and so
right.
she'll just tell the band,
right.
you know, we're going to go back, we're going to do this, we're going to, you know, she knows what key she's singing in, and I don't really, so she usually, my sister is a musician as well, and I'm sure you've heard Taylor.
No, actually, I haven't.
No?
Uh-uh.
My sister is a musician as well, and so they have a lot of
what does
experience.
She play?
She's a singer.
Ah,
I see.
Oh, she younger than you?
She's younger. She's about 23, I want to say.
Okay.
And she has a band locally.
So this is the thing. You said a very smart and interesting thing. You said, in Denver, I auditioned because I thought of it as practice.
It's the same thing.
Right. And so go places where you don't know anybody, where you don't know the musicians. Mm-hmm. It's all about practice. It's all about practice no matter what you
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
And fortunately, there are a lot of places that you can do that. It's just another place to practice.
Yeah.
So that you get comfortable. And most of the bands that play at the jazz jams, mm-hmm. you don't have to tell them. They'll follow you.
Yeah, I know. I just, it's having like all those men behind me, you know, it just, I feel intimidated. You know, and I know that they're like super, super professionals and they're really, really good at what they do. And I just feel like they just think I'm an amateur and
maybe this is a future thing for you.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, I don't know if you know, I played Patsy Cline in Always Patsy Cline at the Manatee Players.
Oh, no, I didn't. Wow.
And country music has always sort of been something that I've really, really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And I've thought about putting together, like, a Patsy Cline tribute show.
That's lovely. It's a lovely idea.
I would love to do something
and
like that.
And see, for that, you just get a piano player, and, you mean, you know...
Yeah.
You work it out with him, and...
Right.
Right.
So, I don't know. I have lots of things that float around in my head all the time, you
well,
know?
And that... Do you have a piano at your house?
I do.
Yeah, so yeah. Somebody could come to you when mm-hmm. you're babysitting and work it out?
Yeah.
Yeah. Having given as much of your life as you have to the work of performing,
mm-hmm.
what would you say about that? About what that's like, what that means to you, what you think about it?
I don't know that I really think about it. Sometimes I think I have regrets that I didn't do certain things the right way to have been able to pursue it. I mean, obviously, I have pursued it professionally, but to get all of the right training to be able to pursue it professionally and to be able to actually do it full-time as a career, because it's always just sort of been something that I do in addition to whatever I do to make money, too.
So do you think it's too late for that?
I have this secret dream that when my twins are grown and when I'm like 50 something, that I will be able to pursue it professionally. That's my new dream.
How old are your twins?
My girls are, let's see, I guess they're almost 20 months. They'll be 2 in December.
Well, so you have another full-time job.
I have 2 full-time jobs.
Right.
I take care of the girls, and I also have a lot of help, luckily. And I run a business from home as well.
So I
stay pretty busy. So, yeah, it's almost like 3 full-time jobs.
It is 3. It's not almost.
It is.
It is.
Yes.
So you never know, right?
Yeah, and you know, I've been lucky enough to be able to continue to do it. You know, even if it isn't my career. Even if it was my career, I probably wouldn't even be making enough money to support, you know, myself and two children and, you know, I mean.
Well, but even if you were, something would have to have gone. I mean, you can't be the kind of mother you are
right. And
have that career. So you might have wanted to give that. I mean, a lot of people make that choice. The choice is, I want the career, and I want to be that kind of mother. I'll get somebody to take care of the kids, and I'll do the thing. But you can't do them both.
Right.
So as long as you choose to be the kind of mother that you are, mm-hmm. There's just so much time in the day, so much energy in the body.
Right.
Right? Right. So, yeah.
But I'm happy to be able to just do it in the evenings. Mm-hmm. I feel incredibly artistically fulfilled.
It's lovely.
I don't feel like, you know, every once in a while, you know, I'll read about a friend who's on a cruise ship or, you know, at some theater somewhere and getting paid, and I'll have like a twinge of jealousy. But for the most part, I've always been a firm believer that where I am right now, there's a reason for where I am right now. And I was not planning on having any children, but it just kind of happened. And I mean, my life is so different and so amazing right now. Mm-hmm. And I obviously wouldn't change it for anything. And now I can just, it just makes things a little different. It just shifts things. I'll never give up on wanting to be, you know, a famous paid actress. I mean, of course, you know, I always will be that 9-year-old girl who says, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I've done it.
Yeah.
I've done it my whole life, except for a little chunk of time where I took a break. But, you know, I still do it, and I've just been so lucky to have a partner who supports me and who watches the girls at night when I go to rehearsal, and I've been so, so, so lucky. And I am doing it, and, you know, whether I get paid or not is, I'm beyond that, except for every once in a while. really. Know, but I'm in a different place, and every role I play, every director that I work with, all my fellow actors, there's always something to pull from every experience, and I'm a firm believer in that I was meant to be here at this time for this reason, especially when it comes to my art. So
it's a great place to stop. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having
Elena.
Me. Got it. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Me.
And come out and see her as Blanche DuBois in Streetcar. Thank you, sweetheart.
Thank you.
I'm a firm believer that I was meant to be here at this time for this reason, especially as it concerns my art. This is what it sounds like when you are doing exactly what you are meant to do, when you are being the person you really are. I believe I am meant to be here. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is who I am. It is my hope, as always, when you listen to Elena, that you hear in this. So it's not perfect, but I know this is what I need to do, who I am. And when you hear this, it is my hope that you're asking yourself, is this how you feel about your life? Are you saying, I know I was meant to be right where I am right now? Okay, it's not perfect, but I wouldn't change it. This is what I am meant to be doing. This is who I am. If for some reason, this is not how you feel, if what you're saying is, I don't know why I'm doing this, or I am acting in ways that I know are not good for me, I'm doing things that don't feel right, but I don't seem to be able to change them. I seem to be stuck either in an activity or a behavior or a way of being or with people that I don't feel reflect who I really am. And if that's what you think, then it may not be too late to recover whatever it was you had to deny. Any of the ways in which you are not being the person you actually are recoverable. So if you want to talk about any of that, if you have questions about that, or you want to make a comment about that, or anything that you hear in my show, or anything at all, You can find me at my website. That is thelynshow.com. THELYNNE. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. Lots of people will want to spell it without the E, but it has an E. Thelynshow.com. And up there, you can click on the email tab and ask me any questions. I'll be happy to hear from you and answer you. You can listen to all of the past shows. As always, I hope you got something you can use from this show. Something that you didn't know that you know now. Something that amused you or intrigued you or maybe even inspired you. Something that will get you to come on down and see Streetcar Named Desire to support Elena in her work. Something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have got